welcome back to another episode of Over the Glass. I am your host, Drew.
I'm Nessa.
And I'm Jay.
We're back.
And we are back. You guys, regular season hockey's ending. Everywhere.
Woo!
It does. I was wondering about that. Do you guys, is there like a sense of relief for you guys once all 82? I mean, like, obviously the Sharks are in a different sort of predicament, but even if you were good, like at the end of 82 games, are you a little bit like, whew?
No. Well, I think last year, yes, because I don't think we expected to be so bad. This year, we expected this. So it's just like, meh, all right, it sucks that Sharks hockey's ending because, you know, we won't see them play till October after these next last two games. But it's nice to know where they fall.
Yeah, I'd say the last, not this season, the previous few where we were rolling downhill in a big way. And, you know, it was kind of like unexpected for us, I think, at the end of those seasons. We're just like, eh. And then this season, we're just more like, yeah, we're getting to the bottom. Time for the draft. Like, I'm actually sad that the season is ending because the guys have, you know, they've come a long way. We've kind of looked at this season in a sense right. Where we're kind of looking for individual improvement from like the young prospects and then the guys that were brought in, veteran presence to kind of like, you know, guide them. And they've all been kind of like on their own journeys and they've found a way to, you know, it's really like, I get that fans are upset that the team is not as good as we would like them to be, but it's not at all that the guys are intentionally trying to lose. Like they've been going out there and they've been trying really hard and it's been nice to kind of see them get rewarded here and there. I mean, obviously we're still losing like last night, but you know, there were moments like last night, like Granlund got like a go-ahead pass over to Eklund and like they were just kind of like converging into the wild, like the home area, and Ferraro, I guess he was calling for the pass, and just for Eklund to recognize that, you know, he's there and he's right down there in the slot, and he just snipes it right past Wahlstedt. Like, you know, like all these guys have been on their own little personal journeys, and they've been able to grow together, and so it's sad in that sense that we won't get to see more of that for like another couple of months, and then this team is probably going to look, you know, more. It's going to be different for the better, but it is sad because the season hasn't been great, but then you grow on these guys and you want them to do well.
The attachments I develop.
No, I just because, you know, like for the first time in a while, I know we went to, you know, what we all call the playoffs in the bubble. But to me, that was a different sort of vibe, you know, even if they're still trying to compete for the cup. I don't put an asterisk next to that, like postseason, but it was a different vibe entirely. So now it's like being on the other side of that where it's not just 82 games. Like here I am. Like, this team is actually like, there's more to play. It's a different sort of adjustment. Like, I'm thinking, okay, well, the season's over, you know, in a few days. Like, but we turn around and the playoffs could start on the 21st. I don't know. It's a little bit like, I guess I'm used to it with my other teams that I follow in other leagues, but knowing that there's the potential for, you know, 16, however many more games, is a little bit, I don't know. I like it, but I'm also scared because this season has been so good that I kind of just like, can we just like package it and maybe not tarnish it with like an embarrassment in the playoffs, you know? So, I don't know. I got to get used to that nervous excitement for postseason hockey.
It's real.
It's so real. It's something I haven't like genuinely experienced in for long, like so long. I'm like, I don't know if I like this emotion. Like,
No, I think the one thing that Jay and I realized like last season or even the season before was that we're not stressed during the playoffs and it feels amazing.
That's true too. I guess because it's kind of like, well, we like, I, and in my head, I'm like, you know, like if this team loses out, the Canucks lose out in the first round, like you can't knock anything that the turnaround that they've had. So it's like, I won't be, I think, as sad as I would be if maybe like we went to like round three and then like got swept or something like that. I would be like ultimately devastated, I think, if like the actual prospect of the cup becomes more of a reality than us just like with a first round exit. So
yeah.
With, I was just wondering, because, you know, like it's hockey is ending everywhere, right? You know, it's the junior guys are starting their playoffs, I've seen, and the NCAA played their Frozen Four tournament this week. Yesterday, Denver and Boston College. And so I know you guys have Will Smith that was suited up for BC. We had Tom Willander, you know, one of our Canucks. Actually, I think Willander was Boston University. There's too many Boston schools that are all like, they all have the same name. But still, what a great, it was a pretty fun game yesterday. Did you guys catch any of the Frozen Four tournament?
No, I was out and about. This is Jay's, this is Jay's topic.
So I saw that, actually, I had not initially planned to watch it because, like, you know, we're all kind of lucky with all this hockey that we get an opportunity to have our chance to what's the word I'm looking for?
Experience, watch.
To entertain ourselves with. Yeah. So, like, it really wasn't on my radar. Like, I knew it was, like, happening, like, this and that and whatever related to the NCAA. But what I actually got me interested in it was I saw a quote, and I'm gonna find it right here. I don't remember what the article specifically was about off the top of my head, but I did pull this bit from, they were talking about like Smith, I imagine. And it said, Sharks general manager Mike Greer will not be in Minnesota this week, a team spokesman said. But Greer said in January that he, Smith, his representative, and other members of the Sharks front office would all sit down once BC's season ends and decide what is best for the 6 foot, 181 pound centerman. And Greer says, I know he's got plans to try and win it all and probably won't because of BU. Greer, a former Boston University Terrier, said over 2 months ago, and he said, quote, but after that, we'll talk and see how he feels about his game and how he feels about himself physically. So that got me interested about, like, you know, first off, I'm like, man, those alumni vibes go hard. He's like, this is our top prospect. And he's like, I know, like, all these great things. He wants to be the best at everything, but he won't because of my alma mater. And I was like, damn. But then, so I was like, Then I went looking, and then I saw that it was BU versus Denver, University of Denver, and that was one set for the semis, and then the other set was BC versus Michigan. And so it was like during the day on Thursday, and like the BU versus University of Denver game was much earlier. So I kind of had it play in the background. Like, I couldn't really get an opportunity to, you know, really give it my undivided attention, you know, because work. But I was like hearing in the background. And every time I heard Macklin Celebrino, I was like, I was like, where? What is he doing? And, you know, just we know nothing's set in place yet, but there is that hope. There is still that, like, hope in me that a certain team is not going to end up just getting the first overall pick again because, you know, whatever. But, you know, it was kind of nice to kind of get little glimpses of him and see, like, you know, what all the talk is about, because I've mostly only heard talk. Like, I haven't really, you know, like, I don't have all the time in the day to follow these little things. You get the little highlights and you get the little tweets that say, oh, he's doing great things. Oh, who, this guy's doing great things. And you kind of try to keep up with it. But I really haven't been able to get an opportunity to really see like what all the hype is about, you know? It's yeah. just all talk to me. But, you know, ends up Denver knocks out BU, and I just had a good laugh just thinking about Greer's quote. Because later on in the day, they had the other semis, and it was BC versus Michigan. And, oh, my God, like, Smith got two goals. And I was thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to manifest it again. Because earlier in the day, I was texting with Nate because we were talking and whatever. And Nate's like, yeah, but I got to go play hockey and I've got to go practice, you know, go to the kids' practice. But, you know, I'll have it with me. And I was like, are you bringing your laptop or something? Are you going to just like have it like, you know, in between your sessions? And he's like, oh, I've got it on my phone. You better believe I'm going to have it on the bench. I'm just like, I love you so much. You're just like that level of like obsessed that I can like appreciate. But like at some point he was busy and he was just like texting me going, send me updates. And I'm like commentating on the game and whatever. And yeah. And I said earlier in the day to Nate that I showed him that quote and we were having a good laugh about it. And I said, like, Will Smith could do the funniest thing and he could get a hat trick, you know, when he goes to the finals. And I was thinking, you know, he would get a hat trick in the finals if he went to it. But then in the semis, he got two goals and I was like, or he can do it now. I'm like, oh, Will Smith's on hat watch and whatever. So, and he didn't, but like they looked. That first line, like I was telling you guys right before we hopped on, it didn't occur to me until the finals that like, wait up. Will Smith, how do you say his name? Perrault and Leonard have basically, from my recollection, have been a line all season for BC. And they're all freshmen. Literally, can you yeah. even wrap your mind around
how good they're going to be?
Well, just like, where were you guys when you're graduating high school? And these guys are literally graduating high school, going to Boston College, and being the top line in your first season, going to the Frozen Four Finals. Like, that's yeah. what I was thinking in that moment. Like, do they even think that? Or they're just like, yeah, I'm just that awesome. Like,
well, right now, I'm sure the only thing they're thinking is like, man, not this year. Like, we gotta go back and get back to work next year. But that's so exciting because like, if they're already, like you said, these guys are freshmen and they're just red hot right from the jump. So you get, I mean, like Will Smith, we know he's in you guys' prospect pool. So like, what a great opportunity to have somebody like that with so much talent. Like, let him cook, let him bake for a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, keep him in that college oven and just see what he chefs up and let that run its due course. Especially if, say, like, he stays on that line, all these other dudes are young too, he stays on that line, the Sharks start to see some natural chemistry there. Who's to say that the Sharks don't use a draft pick down the line to bring another one of his line mates in and sort of hopefully hope that that chemistry translates on the NHL level? Because we've seen teams make similar moves like that too. So I don't know, man. I think that's an exciting sort of, maybe you guys could go there in San Jose, is like not just Will Smith, but Will Smith and his buddies.
But so just to clarify, you mean his buddies after the season? Because the two that he's got on his line already been drafted. They were in his draft class.
Yeah.
Oh, where
one of them goes to,
I thought the other two were undrafted.
I believe the Jackets and another one to the
Caps.
To the Rangers. Oh, no. Yeah, sorry.
Rangers? Yeah, it was the Caps.
Forget about the Blue Jackets. I don't know where that came from. The two that were on his line, they were in his draft class. And so they're ready. So I was like, man, how can we make that happen, Drew?
Listen, hey, you don't know. No.
Start whispering into in existence Mike Drew's ears. Tell him the plan.
Be like, yo, I got, awesome. I've been cooking up something. I got some ideas for you, Mr. Greer.
I have no GM experience, but.
I'm just obsessed fan.
Right. But just an idea.
But
Just speaking of which, I mean,
Go
ahead, Jay.
One of the things I was also talking about was one of my friends had said, you know, do you think he comes over to the Sharks next season, or does he go back, you know, to BC for another season? And I'm kind of on the fence because one, I don't want him coming over if we're not ready to have him, you know, like the guys that are in our system right now, they've already been here. Like, we already brought in Eklund a couple seasons back. He spent a whole season with the Barracuda. You know, I think that, like, sending him back to do another year with his Swedish team was the right decision. As much as he wanted to stay, I just don't think it would have been right for, like, timeline-wise. There's no reason to rush him over here, and if we have that choice – then, you know, it made sense for him to spend the whole time down with the CUDA. And then, you know, honestly, I think if he would have stayed there this past season, it really wouldn't have made sense. Like, he would have probably, like, it would have been fine. You know, he probably would have helped the team a lot down there. But, like, for his own growth, it made sense for him to give him an opportunity and let him write his own path with the big club. And he managed to stay up here the entire time, made a huge difference, first power play, first line, all the injuries along the way, all the trades and stuff. Like, he's been him, Granlund, Zetterlund, like, you know, all of them have really kind of, like, taken the reins and, you know, helped this team out the best they can. But, like, with Will Smith, it's like, I'm hesitant to bring him over because I'm unsure if the team is ready to have him with the big club, because he looks ready. But then on the other hand, like you said, just let him cook. Like, why do we need to bring him over if we're not ready to have him? And so, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, if he ends up coming over, then I'm going to be happy to get to watch him, you know, in teal. But, like, I am a little worried that his timeline would be moved up too quickly for no reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Prospects are such a weird, I mean, it really is. It's like, it's a fine line, right? Cause, like, you either pull them too early out of whether it's the NCAA or it's like a junior league or wherever they're at, you can pull them too early and, like, completely stifle their development, or you can leave them in one league for too long and, like, they don't ever really find their next level of footing. So it's like knowing, especially with these top talent guys, I mean, some guys can come in and just, like, translate their game to the NHL's game so fluidly, but then there's some guys that need that extra time. They need to get acclimated in the A, or they need to maybe just get their personal maturity up. I know that there's teams that sometimes keep guys at the collegiate levels or the junior levels just because they need to mature themselves rather than their game. So it's such an interesting tightrope to find, like, a good balance of, like, when you haven't let your potato get overbaked, when you got to pull it right out of the oven at the right time.
Not a potato.
I love potatoes. You're so versatile. Also, Jay, since you said it, the only thing I can think of is how the saying "converging on the wild" would be like a good movie title, because you said that earlier describing the Sharks game, and I'm like, could be the title of a documentary, "Converging on the Wild." But with that being said, talking about prospects, and Look, I'm not. I try to handle talking about this sort of stuff with sensitivity.
You can say if we're happy about it.
But the sharks. I mean, the Celebrini sweepstakes, you guys. How are you guys feeling about your draft luck?
Go ahead, Nessa.
The facial expressions were equally on point.
It's like, yay, we have the best odds, but also we don't exactly have the best luck. Like, we've never ever gotten a first round draft pick ever in the history of the franchise, right? The first time we came close was the Patrick Marleau draft year 97.
Yeah.
I make jokes all the time that the NHL is rigged. I don't know if it is. But if the Blackhawks get the first again, first overall again,
so annoying.
I'm going to I'm going to start my own what do you call it? January 6th riot.
This is running a coup on league offices.
That was epic. No, it'd be amazing. Like, I think I would combust a little bit out of excitement if the Sharks actually pull it off. But, you know, it's up to the hockey gods at this point. So I'm like, what's the word? I'm cautiously optimistic.
Okay. Okay. Jay, your face also said so much.
Yeah, I say I'm. Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. Cautiously optimistic. I don't know if I should say happy or glad that we got this, because it's like it's a weird. Like, most people are just happy to get into the playoffs, right? And so this is like a different perspective to have, where we're just like, yes, we sucked so bad that we clinched the bottom of the league. But given what's happened all this season, given the rebuild that we're in, like, this is one of the better things you could hope for. Like, I mean, you know, I mentioned earlier, it's been nice to kind of see everybody on the Sharks have their own personal journeys and their career. And, you know, and so that's good. But like, this is going to potentially, like, you, like, I see it kind of like, you know, you get to like, there's like several doors in front of you. This is like, which door do we get to walk through? It could drastically change the direction and the how long this rebuild is, depending on which pick that we get. And like, I know people are saying, oh, this draft is like not as good as like the previous one. It's like, okay, truthfully, I don't follow to that level. Like, I can't much. Because it's too just much. Like... That's too much for me. But you know, if we like, okay, so regardless of like the talent aspect of it, I'm here for the stories. Because how awesome would it be if we got Macklin Celebrini, because his dad freaking works for the Warriors and he was, you know, he's from this area. Like, like, we talked about all season about how, you know, just like even recently with Devin Cooley.
Yeah.
How great is that? Like, that helps to, like, keep us engaged, love this team, be less about, like, how awful they are on the ice. Like, all these great vibes. And I'm going to segue a little bit, because I didn't want to spend hardly any time on this, but I do want to mention, like, how Shang had Pierre Maguire, and I can't recall the other hosts from the podcast that we were ranting about a couple of episodes ago. They got them on to their pod, And I tried my best to get through that episode to, because I'm like, okay, they're like, I would never want to have them come on the pod because I might just end up like, you know, like I feel like they had more professionalism than I would, you know, I think I would have, I don't know. Like, I don't know how it happened. I just don't think it would have ended well. But they had them on. They asked them a series of things that basically they talked about on, McGuire talked about on their pod. And then they asked them, like, to have a discussion about it. And they talked about how their, one of the things they said was concerning was like how San Jose needed to bring in more veteran character guys. And I was just kind of like, so first off, what does that mean to you guys? Like when someone uses like those descriptions for a player in the locker room.
Like
oh,
when to people.
Oh, you're asking us. I thought you were saying them in general.
Like, you talk about, like, what people are, like, saying, like, they need to bring, like, veteran character dudes into the room. Like, when. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're concerned that we don't have that and we have all these youth just running around with their heads cut off, not knowing what they're. Like, they're concerned that. Like, we're putting too much pressure on the youth and there's not someone there to guide them. That's kind of what I got from it, but just curious to know what you guys think.
I don't know really, however, to, like, take when they say that they feel like there needs to be a veteran presence on a team. Especially, I mean, because, like, for a while, even still to a degree, that's still a talking point around the Canucks, and I'm like, like, our roster isn't young, right? Like, it's, like, the average age of our roster is, like, 27, like, 26, 27. So, in, like, league terms, like, that's still pretty veteran. So, it's, like, it feels arbitrary to me when people talk about, like bringing veteran characters in. Like, that feels like an arbitrary sort of description. Because, I don't know, it's just, Connor Bedard, for example, not to bring Bedard up, but Bedard's a pretty professional kid to be 19 years old. He seems to be conducting himself rather well. Better than some of the guys that you would call veteran character presences in a locker room. I don't know. I feel like that's a pretty arbitrary description. Like, if you feel like they need a locker room dad, then I guess, but if you're not bringing somebody in...
They've got Grandpa Jumbo, Grandpa Marlowe up in the press
right.
box.
I just feel like if you're not bringing somebody in based on, like, the skill, like, okay, like, yeah, he's a veteran guy, but, like, can he keep up with the kids on the ice? Because that is probably going to account for a little bit more than, like, you know, squirreling them around the locker room and hurting them like children of sheep. Sheep children, you know. Children of sheep is weird, came out.
Sheep children. I mean, I guess I kind of feel the same. For me personally, because I understand how this team works, it's different. Like, I know that we already have a veteran presence. I think for the media that talks about it, they don't see it because, one, they don't pay attention to the team. And two, for them, I think having a quote-unquote veteran presence is having, like, a Sidney Crosby in the locker room. Someone who's so accomplished and well-known and is, like, big. They made a name for themselves in the league, right? But there's different levels of veteranism. Like, I don't... It's dumb. I think the Sharks are doing fine. They just suck right now. Whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt when, and that's why it was so frustrating to me, so irritating to me to listen to it, because I felt like they were, Chang and, gosh, why does his name not come to me right now? I feel bad. The other co-host, I felt like they were attempting to explain that to them. And Pierre would, like, interrupt them And like one of the first things I mentioned to Nessa was like, the first thing he said, it was basically like presenting his resume of having like three decades like in the NHL. I'm like,
the insecurity.
Okay. All right. And, you know, so he's like toting about it. And like, it almost seems like he was like hockey splaining to them, being like, I know these guys, I know that guy, and like, I've XYZ, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, we know. We could look this up. Could you just have a chat with us? Like, instead of being like, wow, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, that. So that was one part of the irritation. It's just like, okay, yeah, who cares, whatever. It's like, they're like, for as much as you know, and I'm not saying that like he doesn't have anything that could be like insightful, it's just like, let me try to recall, like Shang started out with I can't remember anymore. We'll just there was like a thing where he was asking them like, well, where, who are the Sharks going to be better than next season?
Themselves.
And the other co-host, the other co-host, not Shang, was like, I don't think they're trying to. Like, we're not there yet. And then he's like, well, who are they going to be better than in two seasons? And I'm just like, who cares? Like, they're in a rebuild. Like, okay, we'll be better than like the Hawks next season. Like, but still, I don't care.
You know what?
Like,
this is a good analogy.
Like, I don't
for.
Know. It just.
Sorry, it just came to mind. I feel like this McGuire guy. He's so concerned. He's so concerned about the Sharks comparing themselves to other people, whereas the way I see it, Greer has very focused on the team itself, right? Like, he's not worried about what the other teams are doing, how good they're going to be. He's worried about fixing his inner workings. It's like self-care, right?
Shark self-care.
We're taking care of ourselves here. It doesn't matter what everyone else is doing. McGuire, lay off.
I love that. Like that's pretty cool to hear that that's how you like see like how Greer's doing it from like a Sharks fan perspective, because that's how it feels like Rutherford and Alvin and like the revamped front office in Vancouver has been doing it. Because when everybody at the trade deadline was making those big trades, of course everybody was like, what's Vancouver going to do? What's Vancouver going to do? What's Vancouver going to do? Oh, they didn't do anything. They didn't get better. Everybody else in the conference, everybody else in the division improved. And it's like, actually, we had one of the better records coming out of the trade deadline than any other team that made any of those other moves. And I love that. I love knowing that, like, what's happening outside the league doesn't influence my front office. They're just like, we're putting together the team that we think we can get the most longevity out of, like, towards building something good. Because I do feel like, especially in this situation that the Sharks are, where everybody's got something to say, there probably is some sense of external pressure for Greer to make some of these moves that seem like it's doing something, when really it seems like when GMs react in that sort of way, it causes further problems down the line. So it's been really refreshing from like my personal standpoint to sort of feel the same way about my GM. And it gives me hope that the Sharks maybe won't like go through, you know, 10 years of what the Canucks did, which was like rent a piece to get 10 solid games and make it to the finish line, you know.
You rent a player.
Yes. We got him for a lease.
So one other point that I want to make from their discussion was, they were, so going back to the veteran presence, or, you know, whatever it is, so Shang started talking about how the topic of Noah Hanifin got brought in and whatever. And then Pierre was immediately like, well, there's no way that Hanifin is going to go to the Sharks. And so it just, there was a point during the discussion where I just started feeling like there's no right answer to be had here, because they're giving them what I feel like they're closer to the team where they have a better insight versus someone who's yet again, someone who's just looking at the surface and just is like, oh, well, they don't have these like three ingredients. They're failing. And it's like, we've talked about how we have Nico Sturm, we have Mikael Granlund, we had Duclair, like he really freaking wanted to stay. And we were like, sorry, bro, like you're like our most movable piece right now. Like, but he really freaking wanted to stay. And like, so on top of there seeming like there was going to be like no like correct answer to, they were just going to be like, nope, the Sharks are just failing because they don't have like these XYZ ingredients. And no, you guys can't get Hanifin because how are you going to bring him in when this team sucks? How are you going to sell this team? And it's like, so you want us to bring in character guys. You want the team to be better next season, but then we also can't get the guys to bring them in and then our youth are going to fail. Like, it just seems like, what are we even talking about now? Because it just seems like, nope, you're just doomed. There's no way you're going to be able to do the things that I say that like you should go and get. And it's like, and then he talked about like, you know, because California and like the taxes and like the state of the team, like how are you going to make it a place that's going to be enticing to free agents and whatever. And yeah, so it just, I don't know, like it just was a very exhausting discussion and I commend them for having them on. And like, even after they did, and then they like put out a tweet to promote their episode, the other guy on Pierre's podcast quote tweeted it and like had an issue with the way that they, like they said, oh, they brought them on to discuss some of their unflattering comments about the Sharks. And he was like, unflattering. And I'm like, wow.
Can't stand to be wrong.
he that guy was literally like going into the comments with like, I'm assuming like Sharks fans because they were talking about it. And he's just like, whatever like negative or like disagreement that one of the guys had said, one of the comments under that tweet, the dude's like, this guy has two Stanley Cups. Like, what have you done in the NHL? I'm like, wow. Compensation, man. Gee, ooh, I've done so much for that. Dude, the NHL would not be here without fans, so
shove it.
What is I know I'm in Florida, but like how do you ask that question seriously? Like, how do you entice people to come to California? I don't know. It's California. I don't know, like it's pretty
food.
Enticing. Just yeah.
Environment. You know, we got Napa that all the hockey players love to go to all the time. There's Santa Cruz.
You might not be able to sell them. You might be able to sell them a victory, but like even if you gain a victory on the ice, there's tons of off ice places to go pick up a dub. Like,
do you care about your mental health?
Like, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to purchase a mansion while you're here, but we've got these great vibes going on that no one wants to acknowledge outside of like our little bubble out here. Like, I get in a sense what they're talking about, like the taxes part. Like, we know Dodonov from last season, he had Anaheim on his no trade list and whatever, and it's like, okay, but like, I don't know, it just seems like they were just nitpicking about like the littlest things and then just like not listening to what, you know, Shang and like everyone else who's like, you know, been following this team for however long. And he's basically being like, well, you know, but I've been in the NHL for like 30 years. So it's like, that's why
changing.
That's why I know more than you.
You very clearly haven't been to Northern California in the same amount of time. I just,
It feels like they're just picking low hanging fruit, and it's very frustrating because it's like you're just talking out of your ass at this point. Yeah, I commend Shang. Oh, huh?
I remember somebody saying that, like, the sort of like the same line about Vancouver, like when Vancouver was bad a couple years ago. And I've never been to Vancouver, but I'm like I know the pictures of that city are beautiful. Like, so I don't know what
Vancouver's beautiful.
Right. I was like, you guys, like, that's such a backhanded sort of thing, is like when your team sucks and so does your state and your city and everything else that comes with it. It's like, I don't know. That seems a little extreme. be taking shots like that.
It's dumb. I was going to say, I commend Shane because I feel like he always goes out and looks for these difficult conversations to have for the fans. Just, you know, because everything he does is for us, right? Other than the paycheck. But anyways,
certainly that certainly out a helps tweet. Things.
He put out a tweet talking about Sturm, which, you know, we appreciate him as one of our veterans on the team. He's one of my favorites. He's a very wholesome guy, and I hope he comes back to the team. Honestly, who knows what's going to happen at this point, but
he's got one season left.
He was does he?
Yeah,
I thought he was done after this.
No.
Amazing.
Makes it seem that way from this quote. Like, why does it seem like it's his last farewell?
Yeah. So he asked Sturm about, I guess, what he thought about being in San Jose or whatever, the fans here. And so he goes, Sturm appreciates the fans. His quote says, "They pay my bills, they buy tickets, they buy merchandise. They love the team, they love us as players. There's going to be a day where not a soul in the world is going to ask for my autograph. I try to take the time, but put a smile on their face." So this is what I mean when I say he's one of my favorites, and because he's such a wholesome guy. Like, he understands that him, other than, you know, working his ass off to get to the NHL, playing in the league is a privilege. Fans don't necessarily have to like him, right? So he takes the time, and I saw someone comment on this thread saying that he walked around and signed so many autographs after the game, and they took a picture with him, and he looks so happy just being out there. Like, I love this dude. What more do you want from a veteran?
Right. He's checking all the boxes, it seems. I love when, like, players, like, give that sort of, like, genuine verbal acknowledgement of, like, the people that support. Because, like you said, like, they're not really obligated to do that. But Jay, you guys both made a good point. Is like, if it not been the fans, like, this league wouldn't keep its lights on. You know, like, it's at the end of the day, we're the ones that help drive the profit margins. So it's really cool for, I think, the players to recognize that, because they're not obligated in any shape, form, or fashion. But to know that, like, especially with you guys, you've had the season that you've had, and there's still been the Sharks faithful that showed up in the tank and supported the dudes. There's still people that are tuning into the games. I mean, I'm the same way. My team go over 82, and I'm still watching every game. I'm not going to give up on them. You know, it's nice to have that acknowledgement that, you know, like, the fans are there, and despite all of the bad weather, you know, you're planning to stay around for when things get better. So it's always just a nice, like, it's like, thanks, you know.
Thanks for paying my bills.
Right. You're welcome, sir. I'll keep watching. It's like you said, Nessa, like, there's, like, you're not obligated to, like, any of the players on your team. There's been people that have dressed in Canucks jerseys before where I'm like, meh.
Yeah.
You know, like, it is what it is.
We've had some of those too.
Yeah. So it's cool when you have, especially when you have the guys that, like, you really value on the roster are the ones that, like, step up and say something too, because that's kind of like a I see you, boo, you know, moment.
I feel so seen.
I feel so seen.
You have no idea I exist, but thank you.
but it feels like you do. It feels like you know.
Staying on the good vibes, though, did y'all catch the pranks? The prank? Was it? Okay.
Oh, before we move on to that, I want to do a little rundown of, like, yesterday the Sharks were posting about, like, awards that they they handed out, I guess. I don't know if, like, this is a thing or if, like, they're just...
Yes.
Making stuff up.
No, they said,
okay. So Mario Ferraro is the San Jose Sharks media good guy. I can see it 100%. another veteran presence. Like, I know he's only like what, 25 or whatever, but like, we're like freaking Connor McDavid came in when he was 18 and like, what, didn't they like give him the C like immediately? So like, I don't know. Yeah. This like character veteran presence thing, they don't know what you're talking about. And then the Fresh Prince is the Sharks prospect of the year, obviously. Henry Thrun is the 23-24 rookie of the year. I can see that. Granlund is the player, you know, like he, I feel like he really is the most improved. Mukhlen Dulin has won the Barracuda Player of the Year and Barracuda Prospect of the Year. So there's a lot of really great stuff happening in Sharks territory, as we say episode after episode. Don't listen to these guys that like have to start their conversation with telling you how many years that they've been in the NHL.
In case you guys didn't know, we're Sharks fans.
We have the inside scoop.
Personal opinions. So inside.
You heard it here first.
But yes, good vibes. Fleury, as we all know, is a prankster. And he did a thing. I don't know the full story on this. I watched the video, kind of. If one of y'all want to talk about this one, it's just ridiculous. He's ridiculous.
So Duhane was traded to the Avs, and as you already mentioned, Fleury likes to do all these pranks, and Duhane decided, you know, his first trip back to Minnesota, wanted to prank Fleury and essentially TP'd his car. And so he came out and he was like, okay, well, you know, we're going to Colorado soon. So, and what ended up happening is Fleury apparently made a trip to Home Depot, got some other guys to help him out, pretty much took the tires off of Duhane's car, and left him like some, he put a little thing on the hood with soil and flowers, like a signature,
a garden bed on like the hood of his car.
Yeah, and had a sign, for sale sign that basically told him, you know, if you want the tools back to put your tires on, you have to send me an apology video, to which Duhane did, and it was really silly. He like took a video of him and he's like, okay, you won the prank war, ha ha ha, and whatever, and like his face was covered with a skull emoji. So I think Duhane made a comment about like, does Fleury even, you know how to change tire, and Fleury's like, yeah, I do, I don't think he does. So he ended up getting Duhane ended up getting a ride home from one of his teammates because he was just like, I'm not going to deal with this. Like, he didn't even know what to do. He didn't know where the tools were. His tires were under his car. Like, he's like, I'll just deal with this later.
Flower's such a rascal. I love watching, like, I know he still gets the guys on the Pens too when he goes back to Pittsburgh, when Pittsburgh's in town. Like, no matter where Flower's at, he is finding victims. And I just
he's gonna be the Regina George of the NHS. Yeah. Raise your hand if you've personally been victimized by Marc-Andre Fleury.
Like, 98% of the players are just like, in some fashion, I have been victimized by that. I really like the idea of that, like, I guess it was the Avs media person, when they were, like, filming the video of Duhame walking out to this car, the media person was like, yeah, they just went to Home Depot. Like, he was like, I can't believe this is what happened. It's like, did you ever expect anything less from Marc-Andre Fleury himself?
Good stuff. Not so good stuff.
Yeah, I was like,
speaking
not so
of not
good
so
stuff.
Good.
Speaking of more tomfoolery of the NHL, the Yotes. Joke of the week. The Yotes, they are moving away from their collegiate temporary home to Utah, apparently. Salt Lake City. So I have thoughts on how ultimately in the span of expansion, right, the grand scheme of Gary bringing more teams into this league, I think this is an interesting move to get the Yotes in Salt Lake City. But it's interesting all around, like how this has evolved to now result in the Yotes being moved to SLC. And potentially getting a name change. You know, the new ownership group has decided to ask people what they think the name should be for a team in Salt Lake City.
Sorry. Jay's face. Like, what were you thinking?
How are you guys feeling about the ongoing? This is a pretty like screwed up sort of situation, like from the jump. I think how this all came about, because according to like people that have actually looked up the stats, the only time that a team has gotten news of relocation like the same day that they played is when the North Stars went to Dallas. So, and that was like 93, I think, is what they said. So, yeah, what are you guys' thoughts on this whole Arizona situation?
This feels pretty similar to what's going on with the Oakland A's in baseball. They're just doing the fans dirty, not really caring about what they want. It sucks.
Except you add in the extra dirtiness that it looked like they were keeping the hope alive that the Yotes were going to stay in Arizona, simultaneously while having this backup plan to move them to Salt Lake City.
That's exactly what happened and with the A's, though. With like, they were in the background doing deals with Las Vegas, but telling the fans, "Oh yeah, we're working to do this and stay in Oakland." So it's pretty similar.
Didn't something else like that happen too with like the Raiders? Like that was a pretty like there was rumors for a while, and then they ended up like happening to like, geez, like the Northern California, like hang on to your sports teams. But
Oakland, really.
Yeah,
that's doing fine.
That's true. The other side of the bay.
Like I saw this video earlier in the week. And it was really bizarre for like what was going on the Coyotes socials this past week. Like, cause on Monday they put out this video, like, I guess, cause I saw that they were talking about like the whole, auction for land, blah, 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 and whatever. So that's almost like what started the week off, where it was like, here's the future and hope for the Coyotes. And it was like this video where like the arena where it would be, and like, you know, this whole promo thing of like the Coyotes staying in Arizona, and then like what, on Thursday or whatever it was, when the news came down where they're gonna move to Utah, it was like, wait, what's going on? Like I had to go and find all this information of what, wait a minute, wasn't there to talk about like an auction for land? What's happening?
That's what this whole thing, because like at one point in time they were supposed to be breaking ground on a new stadium or a new arena too, and then like it was like they never broke ground. And I had to look this up, because like the chairman and governor of the Arizona Coyotes, Alex Murillo, put out a statement yesterday, and it's like the statement is also a nothing burger. Like, it doesn't address any of it. It actually says that, like, I hope to address these issues as soon as I am able to speak on the topics. And it's like, well, my man, most of the details now are out there. Like, whether or not they might be the right order of events, like, we kind of have an idea of what's about to happen. So they also like left, they came in a day late, yesterday was Saturday, so a couple of days late after the news had even broke, and then we're like, we know that you guys know, but we can't address anything still.
Yeah, I think also what's pretty messed up about this is that they have kept the players, the coaches, like everyone on staff in the dark as well. So they didn't,
yep.
they didn't even know that they're going to have to move soon, like pick up their families and like relocate and everything. Like, how messed up is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I see a lot of people were like talking about the move and the, like, you can call shots at the Coyotes, but don't call shots at the people inside the organization because they're just as left in the dark as everybody else.
Yeah, this, let me see. So John Gambadoro, who runs a sports radio talk show in Arizona, I saw that he said the hockey operations side of the Arizona Coyotes, the players, training staff, will be moving to Utah, not the business side. So it's like, it's just, I don't know. Like, I like, first and foremost, I feel really sad for the fans. Because I saw a lot of people also talking about how, you know, as much as people, you know, from the outside looking in are not really involved in the fan base and, you know, the greater scope of Arizona hockey, like, some people are like, oh, yeah, well, you know, like, there's no hockey in Arizona anyway. Like, this is, you know, the better move. And, you know, you can say all this stuff, like, unattached, but the... Like, there were a couple of folks that I came across who were also mentioning how, you know, like, if there wasn't the Coyotes, there would be no Austin Matthews, there'd be no Matthew Nyes, there would be, you know, none of these guys that, like, I can't help but think to, like, if that were happening here in San Jose, like, if there had never been a San Jose Sharks, there would have been no, you know, there have been no occurrence of me like coming across a game on TV and learning about hockey because no one in my family follows hockey. You know, it's not a thing, you know, as much for places here in California, like, you know, and so it's, and then they're talking about how, you know, they've got their own youth program and, you know, just like little things like that where you just like it can grow and it can continue to be successful. But without like a team to kind of like continue to, and I know they have like their AHL team and whatever, but, you know, it's still a huge loss for that area. And it's just the fact that like this franchise has just been moving around and just like feel like they're in the foster system. Like, it's just really sad for it to come down to this. And then the only people who seem to be winning is ownership. Like, they get paid, they get to, you know, toss that aside. And, you know, there was like mention about how there's going to be a window for the NHL to give Arizona a new team if they can get the arena thing figured out and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, Who's gonna trust this guy who just chucked away this team off to Utah? And like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, because wasn't there a confusion about like they were also planning a schedule? Like, if the team stayed in Arizona, the team went to Salt Lake City. So like, they have like a flex schedule made. So like, well, we really don't know what's going to happen with this team, but we made both schedules. Like, that's 82 games that they mapped out, like, depending on the locale of this team. So that it's like maybe it was a contingency plan. It's kind of already set in stone, but now you've goofed up by now it's the news and you can't run away from it. But it feels like in a little bit, in some sort of ways, like, that's what's happening here, is like the leadership of the team is trying to run away from how this news came out, the evolution of how we got here. I mean, because it's crazy to think that one of the major four sports leagues in North America had a professional team playing in a college barn for however long. And you couldn't work out an arena deal. You couldn't work out any sort of permanent housing for this team. So, well, they can't stay at ASU forever. Now you're just going to let the, you know, pick them up and carry them somewhere else. Like, it feels like if that was how this was going to play out from the beginning, and I know that the there's been a lot of, I don't want to say smoke and mirrors, but it feels like that on some level about if this team stays or if it goes. It feels like if this was definitely an option, like something that you knew was probably inevitable way before now, like when you had to play at Mullett Arena for another 82 games, you probably should have made that very transparent and clear up front, because the way that everything's happened with this team and them finding a home, and then now the way the news has come out, it's been a clusterfuck. Like, it really truly has. It's been a hockey clusterfuck.
Yeah, poor fans. That's what I feel for, it really is, the fans. I mean, the players and the coaching peoples too, but they haven't been dealing with it as long as the fans, I don't think. So yeah, it's a sucky situation all around. So we feel for y'all, Arizonians.
Yeah, it'll be all right, Yotes.
They're not going to be Yotes no more.
That's also so lame I was
saying to one of my friends that I'm going to sound old when I say back in my day, they were called the Phoenix Coyotes. So, yeah, feel free, Yotes fans. Sucks for the players and the staff that, like, are, I mean, you know, the players are used to moving around, but it's like, that's one thing. Another thing is their families, you know, like now all of their families get uprooted and like they don't really get a choice because they've got contracts. And like one of the other things that I saw was that, you know, this new owner is like very, you know, like determined to spend money and wants to make, you know, the new location a place where, you know, they can be of interest to players and whatever. And I don't know, I don't have words to describe like just how insane it all is. It's like you drop this news to these guys like a couple of games before the season ends, and then it's just like, oh, business as usual.
Yeah. And they went, and I will say this, we played them the day that they got that news and they beat us in overtime, and the Coyotes played like they were pissed off. And I was like, rightfully so. If I had just gotten the news that like I'm supposed to just still finish out the season, like everything's hunky dory, and like I didn't just get ultimately life changing news, right? Because players have families, and then there's the coaching staff, the ice crew, the concession people. It affects everybody, right down to like the last person that shows up to work at those games. And so it's crazy that this is how the league sort of was okay with all, and I'm sure the league wasn't to some degree, but the way that this has all come out and developed and even gone to this point is, it's just wild. The ilks of Gary Bettman and his type that stay in the league offices would allow it to progress in such a way where you have players literally finding out hours before puck drop that they're about to be moved. And they don't really get a say in it. You know, Utah doesn't have a team. It's not like they might in their mind be like, okay, yeah, no trade clause to Utah, but Utah didn't exist beforehand. So, you know, what about guys that don't want to live in Utah? Like, they're calling shots at San Jose earlier, but like, well, I don't know what really is in Utah besides the
mountains. I will say the views of the mountains is gorgeous.
Get a house next to a mountain and look at it every day when you get home. At least I have this mountain.
I mean, the salt flats, I guess. There's not much to look at, though. It's just salt flats.
I mean,
you like salts? You like lakes?
If they thought that they were gonna go on their vacations in a couple of weeks, think again. You're gonna have to start looking at houses in Utah. Start looking at schools for your kids.
Oh, that sucks.
XYZ.
Nah, let them go on vacation. Deal with that after.
Right?
Oh, man. All right. I want to talk about something fun.
Yeah, because that's a terrible situation. Nessa?
So we're going to switch over to women's hockey, the Boston team, which it still bugs me they don't have names. put out a tweet to promote that they're having their Pride game this upcoming Thursday on the 18th. Tweet says, because it's about more than just a game, before our first ever Pride game on the 18th at 7 p.m., Jamie Lee Rattray will wear this one-of-a-kind jacket on her way into the where do they play? Songus Center? I don't know how to say that. I'm so sorry. After wearing it, the jacket will be available to see on the concourse and auctioned off, with all proceeds going to Sport a Rainbow. Stay tuned. We'll announce when the auction goes live and get your tickets now. So anyone in the Boston area, go to the game, auction, or bet on this this cute jacket. It's all white. It has like a rainbow collar, a big old rainbow heart on one of the chest sides, and then her number on the right sleeve. Yeah, we love the gays here.
We do. We are Pride. We are proud of Pride.
We are Pride.
We are Pride. Also, the PWHL's first night back after the Women's Worlds Tournament, because they have international breaks in women's hockey, because they know that these women are out here hustling. Hockey hustlers. Pretty dope. I was excited to see, because I don't ever really have a lot to say good about the Bruins, but they nailed it with their Pride night this year. So I'm really interested to see what a league who doesn't do things like ban Pride tape does for their first, you know, Pride nights for teams that are part of a league that invites diversity into their crowd. Woke women's hockey strikes again. No, it's so exciting to get to see how, like, this team, or the whole league, the PWHL, just, you know, gets to take on their versions of Pride nights and specialty nights and specialty events. And like you said, you know, like, just knowing that there is that more open-minded atmosphere, I think openly, like, across the league, it gives it another layer. It's like a five-layer dip, you know? You got, like, all the surface level, but then there's just more stuff, more goodies, more passion hidden right at the bottom of that five-layer dip. I'm hungry right now, if you guys can tell.
Me too now, like... What about a seven-layer dip?
That too, a seven layer dip full of gay hockey.
Okay.
No,
a lot of food coloring.
I'm stoked, you guys. Yeah, it's probably not good. Jay, what are your thoughts about this?
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. You started going and talking about five-layer dip of gayness. I'm like, what are we talking about?
I have to bite my tongue so bad.
Listen, the men's side of hockey, it disappoints us in this area. And, I'm loving that the women get to, you know, have their yet another opportunity to show that the love for our community. And I swear I'm just still thinking about that dip. I'm like, I don't know what we're talking about.
That's my bad. I was like, all throughout, for some reason, this talk about Arizona made me think of tacos. And I'm sitting, I'm like, man, nachos would be real good.
Oh, boy.
That's my bad.
I have a chicken wrap waiting for me in the fridge. I've been thinking about, like, I get it.
Just my brain was like, man, you know what would really bring this conversation together? We talked about
Mexican
five-layered
food.
Chip dip. It's so good. But yeah, speaking of food, that's a worldwide thing. Also,
oh my
hockey
God.
Is worldwide.
What a segue.
It was natural. It felt natural. Felt organic.
Speaking of food,
which food
everyone
can also be
the world eats.
Oh my God.
The subject matter for a worldwide audience, which could also be hockey. Played around the world. The women's worlds. Listen, it was a stretch, but we tried. Which food also exists in Europe? I certainly hope so.
You heard it here first.
Europeans do eat.
More at 7.
Oh boy.
So Women's Worlds today was the ending of the tournament in the Women's Worlds IIHF championship that they have going on. It was Finland and
Czechs
playing. Yeah, the Czechs playing, and then we have the USA and Canada, of course, for the gold medal game. Guys been keeping up with any of the details?
It's the same thing every year.
That is true. That is true.
The only thing that changes is the winner.
Listen, the only thing. So, like I said at the beginning of this episode, like we're blessed to have all of this great, you know, games to catch. It's just I have no freaking time to catch any of this stuff. So I did see, you know, some of the matchups and the results. Like the other day, I think the U.S. went up against like Japan, I want to say, and it was like something like 10-0. I was like, oh, sorry.
But it's cool that Japan has a team even participating.
Mm-hmm.
But
like Nessa said, it you know,
that's so sad.
The growth of women's hockey one of these days will actually be like, oh, wow, when the gold medal game comes out. Oh, we'll actually be surprised.
Yeah. Like, imagine a finals where it's like Mexico against the Philippines in the future.
Yes.
Amazing. I'm down. I will be seated.
Yes. But,
I bet the Mexican team would enjoy tacos if they won.
Shut up, Drew.
I'm so hungry. That's all I've been thinking about. That's all I've been thinking about. And then you had to go and say Mexico, and I was like, God.
Yeah. I was thinking of the most likely Latin American team. I bet the Mexican team would enjoy tacos. No shit.
Mexico is
it would be good too, authentic.
Mexico is Drew's
no Tex-Mex, the real deal.
It's the word to bring him out of like his sleeper cell mode. Activate for tacos.
Tacos?
just rouse me out of my death just by saying tacos. I'll be fine. Okay.
Oh my god!
I think I know. I would be stoked if Mexico had a hockey team, let alone like a women's hockey team.
They
like,
do,
hell yeah.
Well, not a national team, but Mexico has some hockey going on there. It's just not known about because you know brown people don't get a lot of coverage out here. So I'm just keeping it real. I'm sorry.
I mean, that's fair, and probably most people were like, but ice can't exist in Mexico.
Oh, don't
but,
even
like,
okay, no, because someone did say that.
You just triggered Nessa.
Okay, did somebody actually say that?
Not specifically Mexico, but Latin America.
Yeah, someone's...
Because we had an episode a while back with Luisa, and we were talking about Latin America, and, you know, like, she's... You know, she's following women's hockey, men's hockey. There's a whole culture fan base out in Latin America. And, you know, they're excited about hockey. They want to grow, you know, the excitement about it. There are national teams. It's just that, you know, unlike the U.S. and Canada, who have all of these programs that allow women to develop to the highest of their game, like, they're not quite there yet. But that doesn't mean that, you know, even I forgot her name, but she like brought hockey to women in Afghanistan. Like there's interest in hockey there. It might not be ice because that's just the nature of their environment over there, but there's still other ways that you can enjoy the sport. And yeah, and someone made some mention about like, oh, you can't have hockey in whatever area because it's too hot.
I was like, what does that mean? First of all, there's already hockey happening. Second, oh no, because they were like, how would you even have a rink in such warm weather? And I was like, the same way we have it down in SoCal and Nevada and Florida, right?
Right.
And then they just kept going. It was like, no, it doesn't make sense. There's no interest down there. And I was like, no, there definitely is. There's already teams. They just don't have the funding or the resources to get big like we do. So
the crazy part about it is that was a comment on one of our clips from the episode with Louisa. It's like, did you not listen to the episode where this entire episode was talking about the interest in Latin America?
Yeah,
That's crazy. I've heard people say that about like teams in Florida, like you can't even put ice there, and it's like, well, we do, and it's working out just fine. So like, I could totally see that being somebody's line with like the Latin American countries. There's a Brazilian Canucks fan page. I love those guys. It's like,
Brazil.
The Canucks come to Brazil. Their energy, though, is like it's like soccer match energy.
Yeah,
like it is so like I love watching any Latin American sports game in like the native language because the energy is just off the chain. Like everybody's so hyped when somebody scores.
Have you watched the hockey game broadcasted in Spanish?
No, I need to. I love watching like the like when they do like the Punjabi night and stuff like for the Canucks, and I love hearing like the Indian guys with the goal for like 20 minutes. I'm like, I love that energy.
Yeah, the Sharks and the I know the Kings, and I'm sure probably the Ducks and the teams in Florida probably do it too. But for like Hispanic Heritage Night and stuff, they'll have the broadcast in Spanish, and they'll always do the elongated goal just like in soccer games, and it's always fun.
I love that. I'm gonna have to. That might be. I didn't know that there was. I'm pretty sure the Panthers have one. I'm gonna have to look for a Spanish simulcast.
I'm sure they do,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Help me learn Spanish.
I can help you learn Spanish.
I know, but you know,
more than tacos.
You're in practice. More, I know more than tacos.
You know nachos, I know too.
And pantalones.
Okay.
Is there anything else that we should talk about?
I think we're good. I think it's lunchtime.
Yeah. Well, it's dinner time for me, but yeah. I'm down to go get food after this. So,
closing thoughts.
Yeah, you guys. Closing thoughts. This episode just happened, and I've been true.
I'm Nessa.
And I'm Jay.
Thanks for joining our weirdness. Bye.
Bye.
Buenos noches, dear listeners.